26 Councils of Government work sessions on the following four bills. Senate Bill 321, 322, 693, and 159.
Senate Committee on Local Government and Urban Affairs will come to order. First thing we're taking up is Senate Bill 693. You have some amendments in front of you, and Senator Meeker moved the amendments to be adopted. All those in favor signify by saying aye. Senator John Burns, those amendments are essentially, they substitute the word for curb cuts and ramps, or just ramps or ramping. Is there any further discussion? I got here early this morning.
Do we have a rule with this in respect to smoking?
We sure do.
No. I'm not smoking. He wants to. We passed the amendment.
We haven't voted on it yet for discussion. Okay.
Yeah.
Any further discussion?
Provides for other than the rank.
Sure.
Well, the point is that you have a curb cut back, and a lot of times that's more desirable. Just strictly ramps, a lot of time you run into problems with storm sewers and so forth. Any further discussion? Okay, all those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
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 Opposed? So ordered. Senator Jernstead moves that Senate Bill 693 be sent to the floor with a two-path recommendation. Any discussion?
One question.
Senator Meeker.
Does this provide for the problem that we discussed in certain new curbing in certain areas where it's very steep terrain? Is there anything we can do about that?
I don't think so. I think we need to leave the local government here and not do it in certain areas.
Only
I'm thinking of the type of situation that, that for instance, a person who suffered a stroke and paralyzed on one side, or a person has one foot, the person drags, and he can get on a steep slope just as well as he could on a level piece of ground. Every time we tried to think of something to fit this around some situation, we found that we think of the need for it, even in those localities.
Well, where does the 1 inch rise per 8 inch run come from?
This, we had testimony on that. There's a handout on it that has been worked out very carefully by the City of Portland, Department of Public Works, in cooperation with the group that we're sponsoring this.
I can't answer your question.
Okay.
I just don't know.
Any further discussion? The clerk will call the roll.
Senator Meeker.
Aye.
On Senate Bill 159, Senator Meeker moved that sections 20, where's all those supposed to be? 20 and 25. We deleted the bill.
What are you working from, Mr. Chairman?
You have to take this one here. Mark up here. John, like this. You got a special file, 159. Yeah. When you look at section 20 is the repair and deduct, so-called self-help, help for minor defects. And section 25 is the other edge of the sword for the landlord. Senator Meeker moves that those two sections be deleted from the bill. Any discussion?
Yeah, Mr. Chairman, I want to make sure, what page on
page
this?
14 and page 17, respectively.
Page 14, lines 9 through 24.
That's right.
Yes. And then the
page 17, lines 21 through 31.
Okay.
Any further discussion? All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Okay, so ordered. Senator John Byrd moves the floor, the bill on the floor of the due pass recommendation. Any discussion? Senator Meeker.
The landlord main section is still in the bill.
Still in the bill.
The only remaining area.
Well, I mean, it takes away the landlord lien. The landlord lien is in present law. This bill deletes it.
Yeah. The only remaining area then would be the FED area.
The defenses to FEDF. Want to recall there that's a two-edged sword the way it's in there. The landlord can recover up to 2 months' rent from a tenant for willfully withhold. Also, the tenant can get stuck with attorney's fees if he loses. Felt that he needs to have an opportunity to raise defenses for him.
Mr. Chairman, the concern I raised Monday when we met was. I think the argument has been made, and I'm inclined to agree with, pretty well vitiates the forcible entry container. I personally think that that's not a bad idea to get rid of the forcible entry container. It doesn't work very well, in my view. On the other hand, I'm a little concerned about doing it this way, and I recommended at that time with absolutely no support from any place around the table that we take that out of this bill and address it in a separate bill on forcible entry container. And I made the comment about the confusion of the summons. Mr. Williams provided me with an updated comment on his part that the confusion may be there, but it's not a statutory confusion. It's just so that he doesn't feel we have to take it out of here. I'd like to take it out, and the motion's not in order with a motion to set it on the floor. Then I'll move that we take out the FED aspects, which are defenses. And the motion also is that we have a committee bill put in the committee bill. So I guess take the FED by itself.
Those are identified on
what difference they have when you look here and look there.
Well, my concern is that I suppose that's a good argument. I think, frankly, my feeling would be that the only good aspect of FED as I see is immediate possession by the landlord in a certain circumstance. Those circumstances would be pretty well spelled out. I don't feel very strongly about it, because I don't think FED is, we presently have a great remedy, and nobody else wants to go on.
I think you should express my concerns. One is that if it doesn't require that.
What page?
Well,
page is 28.
Well, it starts on page 15 of the mock-up. Starts on page 15, section 22 is landlord's noncompliance and defense. another section of it on page 20, section 35. I think that the two that we've identified is dealing with MDD.
Well, that was the uniform commercial code sites, aren't they? 87? After 87?
No.
That MDD?
So I think, well, yeah. Miscellaneous section, but.
Yeah, but I mean the OR and
ORF 57.
I thought fluoridation was an old brand, but this is.
Now, 321. I understand there's some minor amendments to that.
Yes, sir.
Okay. You prepare them, Jane, for danger. You want to come up here, according to Jane. When we had a hearing on this on March 27, the League of Oregon Cities proposed certain amendments by their attorney, Jim Mattis. You have in front of you amendments dated March 30, 1973, which were prepared by the Legislative Council's office, which I understand does the same thing the League of Oregon Cities requested. Is there somebody here from League of Oregon Cities? Is that correct?
I've not seen the final print.
Okay, come on up here.
Are we on 826?
We're on 321.
They do, Don. They do exactly what the hell we're talking about. The
I just looked at the Mrs. Gearhart's
pencil version.
That's on 21. Whose copy is this?
That's hers. That's the wrong bill. We're talking about 321. What it does is make sure that the division tells the city to start. It gives 120 days to start. And it says that the city pays for the panel. Mr. Chairman, these I believe these amendments are improvements. They cause the Health Division no problem at all.
All right. I want you to take about 1 minute and refresh the committee's memory as the need for this bill.
This is the Health Hazard Annexation Bill, which has been in statute since 67. This bill had formerly put this duty upon the State Board of Health. The Board of Health does not feel that it is equipped as a group of 15 persons to make these investigations and the surveys. The Board of Health has adopted as a policy the position that this authority should be placed in the division itself rather than in the whole board. Therefore, they ask for this bill. The bill makes two other changes. It allows boundary commissions or county or district health departments to initiate the proceedings, and it requires that the city affected pay for preliminary engineering plans that must be drawn.
Senator Jernstead moves the amendments. Any discussion? All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye. Aye. Those opposed, no. The amendments are adopted. Does anybody here have a problem with this bill? Have any questions?
I do not understand it.
You just missed the 1 minute explanation for her.
We'll have to explain it to you later.
It essentially moved it from the Board of Health to the Health Division.
Yes, sir.
To Health Hazard.
I'd like to have a little discussion of Section 12.
Right.
Contemplate moving this to the floor.
Well, if the discussion's not going to take too long, we will.
Under the current law, and we're talking now of what Section 12 does, 11 citizens may petition the state to start this proceeding. The first thing that the state does is say, city, please initiate the annexation proceeding.
Correct.
The subsection 3, well, it is now subsection 3, said then that the city shall proceed to prepare the plans and for the consideration of the proposal in the commencement of the proceedings. The amendments to this section would leave that as it is with this and add to it this language, that a local health department, and a local health department means a county or district health department. There are no city health departments in the state. A local health department may also bring the question up to the health division and say, please start this, in which case the division does exactly the same thing. From a drafting standpoint, it was found desirable to have it in two subsections rather than try to amend that other subsection.
Is there a public vote in the current law?
There is not. The whole concept of the present health hazard annexation law is that no vote may be taken. It is an annexation without the consent of the persons involved.
Senator Carson.
I realize this is not necessarily your language, Corning, but could you lay on me why the boundary commission can also request? So I can understand the local health department, but how come the boundary commission is now a health agency?
The boundary commission, it is their request, and we concur with it, that they should be able to initiate the request. That does not mean that they can cause the annexation to happen.
I understand that.
It only means they can initiate the request. The decision is still to be made by the health authorities as to whether or not the hazard exists.
By the health authorities, you mean by the state?
State health authorities, yes.
Senator Lee, I'm sorry, Senator Carson, another question.
Well, I just, Chairman, if I understand it, can I should read this to be better informed. Can you initiate your own without a request of local health?
The law specifically does not give us that authority. As a practical matter, yes, we can.
By making a phone call?
By making a phone call.
Mr. Chairman,
Senator Lee,
I move that we delete line 21, page 9, after the word department, the remainder of the sentence. And on
the line.
And it takes out or the boundary commission?
Yeah.
You got any other amendments?
I think that does the job.
Discussion.
All right, now you want to take out or the boundary commission?
Yep.
Just get the boundary commission out of the act.
think your argument, why did they say this should be in, and why do you think?
Well, Mr. Chairman, I think this is a health question. The Boundary Commission is, the function of the Boundary Commission is to solve health disputes over annexations and of that nature. And I think when you have a health hazard, it should be the local health agency and the department that make a decision, not an agency that's there to solve annexation disputes.
What does that bind you to?
We just take out more of the Boundary Commission on line 21.
Senator Meeker, it seemed to me that you have a situation where the Boundary Commission is considering a more general situation and could include things like this along with the proposal. I would doubt that the Boundary Commission would be doing it solely for this purpose.
I think that might be the point, Mr. Chairman. The Boundary Commission may have other things going and all of a sudden become a health agency. I agree with Senator Meeker.
Well, the decision is ultimately made by the health division anyway, whether the danger to public health exists. They make that determination.
Well, Mr. Chairman, the annexation without a vote of people being annexed or the people doing the annexation, I think, is a very narrow exception. I think it's hard to defend anything other than strictly public health. I just don't understand how the Boundary Commission, to me, is in the wrong area here when we're talking about public health, because they're not a public health agency. It's a very narrow exception to be narrow in the street.
I don't feel strongly about it because we're here. We're concerned about this law for one purpose only, that the dangers to public health exist. If it exists, I'm sure the procedure is going to be done by somebody, and that's all we're concerned about. Any further discussion on the amendment? All those in favor of the amendment signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Those opposed, no. I mean, answer, no. Everybody's recording.
You voted on both sides of the question.
Okay, the amendment's adopted.
Mr. Chairman, well, one other thing I ask, based on page 10, we had some discussion of the new language on 3, 4, 5, and 6, on the expense of it.
That language is proposed to be amended by the amendments that the chairman has presented to you. The language, as it would read,
that's the other part.
Yeah.
Line 3, while
and it simply
out
says
the word which, and then you put a period after B on 4, it shall be. Oh no, there's a period there. I beg your pardon. But you take out the rest of line 4 after it shall be. Take out all of line 5. And then you insert, replace line 5, paid by the city a bond.
Yeah, okay, fine.
And it deals only with the preliminary, with the plans themselves, too,
yes.
Not the costs of the study.
Yes.
And I think it's an improvement over the bill as presented.
Any further discussion?
Mr. Chairman, I wonder if we can have an explanation of the
what?
An explanation of the added language to the law on page 10.
As presently amended, the law will say the expense of preparing plans shall be paid by the city upon vouchers property certified by the administrator. We have never had this problem arise until the case of Florence recently. Florence simply said, no, we won't prepare the plans for this annexation. The annexation could not proceed. It was necessary for us to use nearly $3,000 of health division and funds in order to prepare those plans. Now, that annexation has been perfected. At a meeting yesterday, the Board of Health and the division really concurrently ruled on that annexation. There is one chance for an appeal remaining to the board. That matter will go to the Lane County Boundary Commission. The city of Florence and the area to be annexed has thus profited by the cost of those plans, which they now have and for which they have not paid, and for which there is no way to make them pay.
I understand that the rest of the administrative costs are borne by the health
are
division.
Are contemplated in the health division's budget. And we use a lot of local health department help on these when we do the dye tests in the survey.
Any further questions?
Lane County.
Oh, Senator Carson moves the bill to the floor for the two-pass recommendation. First call the roll.
Senator Carson?
Well, since I made the motion to move it, I think it's more fair.
Okay, now look, on 322, we're not going to do it.
Mr. Chairman, I appreciate that. May I pose a question that the committee needs to consider? 322 has had massive amendments proposed to it. Those amendments have the function of bringing the boundary board into the action on 322 in a very strong situation. Would it be possible to have direction as to whether or not the boundary board is to be included in the health hazard district formation? Because if the decision of the committee is to exclude the boundary board from the health hazard district formation, as you have just chosen to do in the other, it would help us to draft amendments to accomplish the purpose.
I'm in favor of abolishing the boundary.
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to have Connie respond. They didn't object. He said Senate Bill 321 to the inclusion of the boundary. How do you include a minute on how the boundary commission works? Will work with you in 322? How that?
Under 322, they would have the same right to propose a survey. We would then make the decision, and if it was a boundary board area, would say, all right, boundary board, here is the finding. You now cause the creation of some entity capable of solving this problem. Oh, if it is not a boundary board, we would say to the county court, county court, we have made the finding. You now must cause the formation of a district eligible to solve this problem, which could be county service, sanitary, sewer, metropolitan service district.
If we take out the boundary commission function here, would you go to the court then?
I think if we took out the boundary commission function, it might require an amendment in the boundary commission law, because it would, if you took the boundary commission function out of 322, you then are putting a district formation procedure in a boundary commission area not subject to the boundary commission.
I think that's a bunch of different balls.
Chairman, I may, Grayson's asking a policy decision on whether or not to take the boundary review commission out and hire the boundary commission.
My opinion is leave it in. Well, okay, Mr. Chairman, I don't think that the boundary commission should be making a decision as to whether or not there's help there.
They would not. No, sir. Under no circumstance do they make such a decision. They simply decide which political entity shall be formed to solve the problem.
That's right.
In the 322 context.
Let's, when is the next time we put this on for work session? We do?
Very well.
Next Wednesday night.
We'll be here.
Which is a regular meeting of this committee at 7 o'clock Wednesday night.
Thank you very much.
Okay, 826, Councils of Government. Thank you.
Oh, you want me to sit for that, Mr. Chairman?
Chairman, they had me in the back room again.
Wally, how are you?
Yeah. Chairman, if you'd like, I would read the text of our comments this morning, and then if I may, I'd like to make just a few comments. Thank you, Wally. I'm here this morning as mayor of the City of Salem and representing the City of Salem. The City of Salem over a period of years has made a major commitment to the concept of a regional and area-wide planning and governmental coordination, and has been an active member of the Mid-Willamette Valley Council of Governments for about 14 years. In fact, if you use certain membership criteria that key to elected officials on the governing body, the Mid-Willamette Valley Council of Governments is the oldest regional council in the nation. And the city of Salem recognizes that while we may be the central city within the Marion Polk Yamhill Tri-County area, most of the problems that we have to deal with go beyond our corporate limits. And our city council has, in a loud and clear voice, supported the concept of working together with adjacent counties and districts in planning and providing services for such diverse activities as parks, recreation, transportation, housing, vector control, sewage and collection treatment, water facilities, law enforcement, storm drainage, environmental health, solid waste, and library services. Mr. Chairman, I can think of no better way to articulate the view of the city of Salem on councils of government than to repeat the statement made by Vern Miller, the immediate past mayor of the city of Salem and the immediate past chairman of the Mid-Willamette Valley Council of Governments. Dr. Miller made this statement in January of 1973 at the Council of Governments annual meeting. It seems to me there are two ways to go in this business of intergovernmental relations. One is the dog-eat-dog rule of the jungle, where everyone grapples and grabs for every advantage and tries to get a leg up on his neighbor. Or two is the participation within an association of local governments where agencies can meet around common goals and jointly solve those problems that none of us can handle alone. Now, I've commented just a bit on the service role of local government. And local government exists only for the purpose of providing service to its citizens. And these services are many and touch all phases of human existence. And without them, our society would collapse. These services are performed in our tri-county area by about 150 governmental jurisdictions, and which are many are duplicating and many of them are overlapping. And we also have the problem of governmental jurisdictions originally being set up to serve people no more than 4 hours away. And however, with technological changes, areas that were once 4 hours away are now only 15 minutes apart. It is therefore obvious that if the needs of the people are to be provided, we must either consolidate or cooperate and coordinate. And here in the Mid-Willamette area, we have opted for cooperation and coordination. And we strongly support our Council of Governments as an effective agency to provide an area-wide focus to local government. In urging committee support of the bill, I would like to suggest that two amendments be considered by your committee. The first being that in relates to Section 3, which, while the bill clearly identifies the regional council's role in planning and coordination, I would like to see a new provision that would just as clearly prohibit the council from becoming involved in the provision of direct services other than direct planning services.
Is this on Section 3?
Yes, sir. In this way, we would prescribe to the regional council responsibility for area-wide planning and coordination with a direct provision of services to the citizen being handled by existing units of local government. Number two, I would also like to recommend.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure that I can put understand the mayor's position on this.
Mr. Chairman, if I would, I would be with him in just a moment.
Pardon me?
I'll be with him in just a moment if I may make my statement.
All right. I'm not sure I'll be with you.
I would be also recommend that an amendment in Section 1 be drawn stating that the regional council is an association of local governments rather than an extension of federal or state government. Mr. Chairman,
I'll stay.
Now I'll answer your question. Yes, sir.
All right. Your proposed amendment in Section 3. Well, what do you get there? You'd like to see a provision that would just as clearly prohibit the council from becoming involved in the provision of direct services other than planning services.
Correct.
Now, as I understand, Craig in my area is involved in human resources and other areas, in areas other than land use planning, let's say. Are you seeking an amendment which would prohibit that kind of activity? When you say prohibit them from being involved in direct services other than planning, what, I don't think.
Senator, what we're driving at is this. I polled the council on this subject, the role of council of governments, and to a person, they came back and said, in their judgment, council of governments are extensions of local government, and their functions should be planning, quote unquote.
What kind of planning?
Physical, human, land use.
Not implementation.
We don't want to see council of governments involved in the delivery of services. Reason being this. There's been a great deal of concern in many parts of our area that we are slowly but surely seeing the development of regional government.
We've seen it.
And their position is that if we are wanting regional government, let's call it that and put it out on the table and vote on it. But at the same time, we want to recognize that planning has to cross these funny jurisdictional boundaries and get onto a scale that which identifies the problem, allows you to deal with it and identify it and plan it. Whether it be human resources, or whether it be land use, or transportation, or whatever it might be. But we do not want to see a gradual working up to the point of, we do the planning, well, why don't we implement the plan? And thereby circumvent the democratic process. That's what I'm saying, Senator.
Can I ask one more question, Mr. Chairman? Simply this, with respect to the second recommendation that you made, where you want it to be clearly stated that the council is an association of local governments. Now, I'm wondering if you're not, I take it you're talking in support of the bill, but you're seeking this amendment, and of course I agree with this concept of local government and government by people responsive to voters, decision making by people who have to answer to an electorate. Well, everybody knows what my position is. However, if you want to really keep it a local government, that implies responsibility on the local part as far as funding it. Is that not true? And if you would agree with that, can you speak to the funding implications of the proposed legislation and tell the committee whether the constituents that you represent would be amenable to taking responsibility for financing the council of government in your area rather than looking to the state or federal government for the financing?
Senator, we fund our council of governments, the operation of council of governments is funded at local level.
On a voluntary basis?
Yes, sir.
Would you be willing to give them a tax base?
No. Because again, we would be circumventing the very statement that I made before. They are planning agencies, and that's the role that we see them performing. And what we're I think what these two amendments are saying is that we want to identify very clearly for anyone who wants to read it what the role of the Council of Governments is to be, and to try to take away some of the ambiguity and some of the anxieties that people have about this creeping government by proxy type situation where a group of local officials get in a room and make a decision over which no one has any direct input into. And I think this spells that out and for all to see. And in response to your second question again, we fund the operation of the Council of Governments is done by the local bodies. Now, in the area of program, those funds come from all sources, 701, federal, state, local. We all make a contribution to the program.
I think there is a, or has been a slight contribution from Mr. Bidwell and the state government.
Yes, sir.
$9,000 on a $750,000 base or something.
That's right. But they're also members of the...
But they are members, in fact. Members of the executive department, the chairman.
That's right. That's right.
Is there any other questions, Mr. Chairman?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Pardon?
I have one more question. You are going to invite us down to see the
city. Pardon?
You are going to invite us down to see the city.
Senator, we had it scheduled for April 27th, and we got a phone call yesterday, and they want to switch it over to May 4th, but you are going to be there. We're going to give you a beautiful lunch and the grand tour. Okay?
What is this for being invited?
Do we have to go to the fire suit?
No, sir. You can just come down as host. We've invited both houses of the legislature to be with the come to the Civic Center, the city, our own city's Civic Center, for a lunch. And it was originally scheduled for the 27th of April, but we're on the House side. They wanted to change it to the 4th of May.
Yes. Senator Beacon, the Section 6 provides for the membership of the council. Very, very general language. I wonder what your reaction would be to this more specific membership section that outlines exactly who is a member of the COG rather than such a general statement of who's a member.
Let's see, now you're reading out what A, B, what? 3A?
Correct. For example, B says any city in the district shall have the right to be a member of the council and representative of the governing body. What about language you would say that a county or the cities in a county shall pick one designee?
Senator, we've done that within the charter and identified the members and the criteria of membership within the charter itself. Now, I don't know whether with that, am I getting to what you're saying?
Why not put it in the law? What's your reaction to that?
It doesn't bother me as long as it's consistent with our charter and we feel that we're comfortable with it. We could send you a copy of
it. I have a copy.
You have. And I find this very, it's a very comfortable arrangement under the circumstances that we're now operating. Now, if...
how many are there on your council?
It's 18. 18 voting members.
You find that unwieldy?
As a new member, coming on and starting to serve for the first time, as a voting member, I can't react to that. I'm sure that I see Reverend Hall in the audience, who's been chairman, and I think he could give you a better feeling for that. Now, let me say this, that if Council of Governments moves beyond a voluntary association, which it is now, and becomes something that has quite a formal structure. The decisions of that group collectively become binding on the other members. Then I would get into discussion with you about weighted voting, getting down to the one-man vote representation of that type of a situation. But as it's now structured, any decision that's made within the Council of Governments by the governing body is not binding on any other member, and if you don't like it, you don't have to go along with it. And therefore, here's the city of Salem casting one vote with a population of 73,000 people, and other jurisdictions having a population of 20,000 or 10,000. And
could you expand on what you mean by the decisions are not binding?
Recommendations of a council of governments on some program are not binding upon the individual members of that group.
But they are, in several cases, they are binding on the voting, on the decisions that you make. For example, solid waste, sanitary landfill, aren't those binding decisions?
Not the ones made by the council of governments, but the ones made by Marion, for instance, Marion County. The governing bodies are binding.
But don't you make recommendations to Marion County?
Yes. But not as a member of council government.
What happens if the federal monies that go along with it are withheld if Marion County doesn't go along with your recommendation? Would that make it binding?
That's part of the game.
Yeah.
Thank you, Marion.
Yes, sir.
Nancy Hayward. My understanding that you're probably best prepared to explain the bill generally.
No. I have a statement to make about Lane Council of Governments. I am Nancy Hayward, Lane County Commissioner, Chairperson of the Board of County Commissioners, and I wish to speak in favor of Senate Bill 826 as it is now written. I represent the majority view of the Lane County Commissioners. Lane County has a long, continuous history of involvement in the Lane Council of Governments. We were one of the local governments who, at the end of World War II, entered into an agreement with other local governments and started the Council of Governments in November of 1945. Today, Lane Council of Governments is the agency of 27 different local governments. These include all the cities of Lane County, the county, and several special districts such as school districts, support districts, soil and water conservation districts, and park districts. We feel local governments must have a vehicle through which they all participate in making joint decisions. The Council of Governments is such a vehicle. It provides programs which we control as a governing board, and I think it is a real asset for our citizens. I'd like to review briefly the broadly based multi-jurisdictional planning program which we have developed in the Lane Council of Governments, referred to in the shortened version as LCOG. The efforts for the county, for instance, include planning and water quality, general land use, and parks and open space. In land use, the staff is currently completing a general plan for the entire county, and in water quality, a preliminary management plan is nearing completion. Several other community plans have been prepared and adopted. It's interesting to note that the initial Metropolitan Area Comprehensive Plan was prepared by LCOG and adopted by local governments in 1959. And recently this plan was revised and readopted. The new plan, called the 1990 Plan, has been recognized as one of the most advanced in the nation. It incorporates controversial features such as urban growth forum and urban services boundaries. In metropolitan areas across the nation, multi-jurisdictional state and local transportation planning also must be done. The public cost of the highway portion of this plan alone in the metropolitan Eugene Springfield exceeds $150 million. The programs that I have mentioned are in the traditional areas which come to mind most readily when we consider planning, but there are many other aspects of planning in the Lane Council of Governments. For example, they carry out a program of comprehensive health planning and fulfill the local requirements contained in state certificate of need legislation. In the area of aging, they have developed using a citizen advisory committee, a program to deliver 91,000 meals to the elderly in the metropolitan Lane County area. A rural program has also been developed. The Lane Council of Governments does not act as the implementing agency. It is an extension of local government staff for planning purposes. It is up to the local governments to implement plans, and in the case of aging, Lane County is administering the program that I mentioned. The LCOG staff that serves us has been active in the area of social services also. Recent changes at the federal level have had tremendous impact on both state and local government efforts in social services. At the request of the LCOG Board of Elected Officials, the staff has developed an excellent document that assists us in placing into perspective the reorganization of the federal government from a structural and fiscal standpoint, and allows us to more clearly define the job we now face at the local level in providing social services. In criminal justice, there is a technical advisory committee which includes the sheriff, the county district attorney, a judge, a juvenile authority, and area police chiefs. Through the planning work of this committee, several hundreds of thousands of dollars in law enforcement grants have been received in the county. Another active advisory committee has been the manpower committee. For instance, through this committee, an ad hoc group allocated all of the Emergency Employment Act funds made available in Lane County. I could go on and on with examples, but I think this gives you a flavor of the broad planning programs carried out by our local governments through the Lane Council of Governments. In order to be so successful in our efforts, we've had to maintain a strong sense of interagency cooperation. The planning involves every county department, and through the various advisory committees, LCOG brings together county department heads with other local and state agency personnel to identify and solve mutual problems. Through this process, we are able to avoid unnecessary duplication. We also have been able to jointly pool our limited financial resources for long-range planning, which has produced results that total much more than the sums of the individual units. This is one of the key functions of a council of governments, which results in substantial savings to taxpayers. LCOG is a very useful and necessary creature of local government. A county or a single city would find it difficult, if not impossible, to carry out such a program. The LCOG program is vital to us, and the multi-agency planning and coordination that they carry out on our behalf is essential to the wise and efficient use of resources in our area. It is for these reasons that we strongly support Senate Bill 826 as it is now written. Thank you.
Question. How many members do you have on the board?
We have 21 members on the board. They are 27 different agencies, but some multi-agency representation in the area of special service districts and school districts and coast and so on.
How many from the Lane County?
One. Well, with two votes, but one person serving on the COG with two votes.
How many votes are there if you have 18 or 21 members?
I guess it must be 22, is that right?
21.
21 votes then. I'd take it back, then it's only 20, 20 members.
Do you find it unwieldy?
No, I don't think so.
How many cities are there in Lane County?
Is it 11 cities? 11 cities, yeah.
So you have school districts and other things over here.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Any further questions, Senator John
Murphy? What's your annual budget for LCOG?
I'm sorry, I can't answer that question. Can
this year is about $680,000.
$680,000. And how many full-time staff positions?
43.
And of the $680,000, a substantial part of that HUD money. And how much represents the contribution made by the respective local government?
$143,000. That's direct tax or contribution.
Can you match with soft match or hard match?
Both.
Now, you don't have all the special districts in the county, obviously. Are there some special districts that have chosen not I get to Dart, and you know, I'm impressed by what El Cog does. I think he probably had the most functional council of any in the state. But do you think that maybe one of the reasons that you've had the success to have El Cog is the fact that it represents a council of government for one county? You only have Lane County, don't you? There's no other county.
Well,
you're a coordinating agency for all the areas of local government in the boundaries of your county.
That's right, but and you may be accurate when you suggest that one of the reasons it functions so well is that this is the case. But it would seem to me that in a multi-county area, that especially where the problems go across county lines, it's even more necessary to have a council of governments. It might not function as easily, but it seems to me it's even more necessary to have one.
Any further questions?
Thank you.
Wes, you and I forgot this gentleman's name, want to come up here and what's his name, Larry?
Mr. Chairman, members, I am Wes Tavares, Director of Middle Iowa Valley Council of Government. And Larry Rice.
The best thing you can do for us is to tell us, you know, what council of government, what they're doing now, and what would be different, what the procedures are.
Right. Mr. Chairman, I'd like to also identify Kay Rich, who helped us with this bill. Bill is actually. Kay, do you want to come on up?
I just gave them a little proper assistance to decide what I'm, since we've got our own bill out.
Right. Mr. Chairman, with regard to your question as what would be different from the way we're doing it now.
You want to speak up a little bit to people back through?
Right. This legislation would make virtually no change in the operation of the Middle Iowa Valley Council of Governments. As the previous witnesses have stated, we've been operating for about 15 years and are involved in a very extensive, multiple area of planning. I was very surprised to hear Senator Burns comment that Lane Cog was the most successful. I always thought we were, and we do span...
I'll pick it up with you.
Thank you. And we do span three counties. We view this bill as a very realistic approach to recognizing what's happening in the state today in terms of the COG organizations and in terms of the COG programs. Senator Burns, we'd be very glad to go over this section by section with you if you like. I think it's a very straightforward bill, and I think not at all complex in terms of the thrust of the bill. Would you like for us to quickly do that?
Okay, I think that might be helpful.
Right.
Get out of the way. I don't think you have to dwell on anything
right.
Unless there's questions.
That's right. Section 1, I think, is the statement that simply states the fact that because of territorial overlapping, the need to coordinate and so on, that the people of the state, the legislature, does recognize the need to put together this kind of area-wide intergovernmental program. Section 2, the only comment there is in on line 6, I think that Morrow County was inadvertently left out in District 12. Section 3 states again very much in terms of identifying the present planning activities of the councils. I would say that of the 14 COGs in the state, certainly Lane and Mid-Willamette Valley and District 9 Council have the most, and Craig, have the most advanced programs in terms of the program functions. Obviously, this reflects the urbanization and the population pressures in those areas. Section 4 is a very key feature, because here in Section 4, the state recognizes what we've been doing all along in terms of making findings of planning conformity for all state and federal programs in terms of hardware grants. Let me emphasize that this is not a denial or an approval of the project, but rather a finding that the project for which state or federal money is sought is consistent with an area-wide planning process and a certified planning process. Section 5, I think, simply provides that we may contract, cooperate, and so on with other councils and with other agencies. Section 6 provides for the governing body. In drafting this legislation, Mr. Chairman, we tried to define this more precisely, as Senator Meeker has indicated, but found that with the great diversity in the terms of the COGS across the nation, across the state, it was difficult to do so. Right. Lane COG, of course, one county with two central cities, Springfield and Eugene at the core. Mid Willamette Valley with a central city with three counties. Eastern Oregon with low population and great land masses. So there's a great diversity in terms of the structure of the local governments in each district.
You purposely left this
flexible,
so they can accommodate their particular needs.
I just wanted to say Portland has two states and five counties and 36 cities and untold numbers of special districts. One of the problems we had with the Metropolitan Service District bill was when it specifically dictated the membership of everyone using that bill, it eliminated the fifth largest city at that time in the state, Springfield, from participation. So flexibility is what's built into the act.
Right. They have their own.
Certainly. It's in here.
District 2, number 2. Mr. Chairman, what's the purpose of having the Craig bill and then
well, if you have a Craig bill, then that passes.
Mr. Chairman, page 5, subsection D of section 6, we feel it's very important to indicate that at least two-thirds of the governing body ought to be from cities and counties. We would recognize the special districts as we do in Mid-Valley and in the other COGs, but it's a it's an organization of local government and ought to be so stated in the law. Section 7 and 8 are pretty much operational. Section 9 simply applies to the existing COGS and recognizes the present organization. I'd like to comment, Mr. Chairman, on Section 10, which is the appropriation section. In the Middle Willamette Valley, our budget is $738,000, and 45% of that $738,000 is local money, 43% from federal grants. So we have a very strong financial commitment on the part of local government in the Middle Willamette Valley. And certainly I think I can state for our council that we would much prefer gaining the principles in this bill at the expense of the appropriation. The thrust of the bill to recognize what we've been doing for 15 years, far more important to us than the appropriation. Well, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to ask Larry Rice to summarize and also comment on the public interest group areas.
Mr. Chairman, if only Lane County
could identify yourself on the
table. Larry Rice, Executive Director of Lane Council of Governments, called District 5. If only Lane Council of Governments, Lane County existed in the state of Oregon, we've been doing voluntary cooperative planning for 28 years. Chances are we could continue to do it for a number of years in the future because of the way our people feel about this. And I'm sure that's probably true also in Middle Willamette. So you might ask, why do we need to legislate this thing? Well, I can try to answer that by saying from my standpoint, this year my budget includes 23 agencies and there are such things as unified work programs for transportation planning that makes me, by federal fiat, integrate my programs with three state agencies, for example. We do that in other function of programs. We find ourselves pushed and pulled by federal regulations and state administrative determinations on how we are going to do planning for their mission. The thrust of this bill is to finally say, voluntary was nice, but we're looking at a state system. And the governor established a planning district system, 14 of them. The legislature has not concurred or denied those. We think it's time now to say if we need a common set of boundaries to do common planning in for both state and local functions, that the legislature should say, this is it, or come up with something of their own design. So we would like to see that determined. The bill does that. Secondly, this takes us off the hook in terms of all the new federal regulations for water quality planning, solid waste management planning, comprehensive health planning, all the things I'm sure you're aware of that require some kind of an area and organization. And it says in the state of Oregon that we, the state of Oregon, the governor and the legislature, with concurrence of cities and counties and special districts, have set forth the system we will use in the state of Oregon to handle planning that's required either from a local standpoint, a state standpoint, or federal standpoint. Then we can look squarely at the face of the federal government and say, as a state right, we've determined this is the way we'll do it, and this is the way it will be done, and they can't push and pull us and require us to do something else for a single mission-oriented agency, such as mass transit or comprehensive health. So we set the pace, and we say, this is what we agree on, and we're asking you to do that, hear that, obtain the testimony, and do it. Okay, establish policy. Now, to back that up, we've had seven national organizations that our vice chairman of the Council of Governments will address if he gets a chance to testify, called PIG groups, public interest groups, that with the request of the White House and through the Office of Management Budget, Executive Office of the White House, did an intensive study of this, and that's the League of National League of Cities, the National Association of Counties, the National Conference of Mayors, the National Legislative Council, all of those kinds of governmental groups. And they have a whole series of recommendations to the president, to OMB, to the states, to the cities, to the counties, to the federal regional councils, addressing this issue of some kind of common system that we should adopt. And this bill essentially takes that and says we concur in all of those state legislative findings, federal agency findings, and local government findings in that research, and we should have sub-state districts. We have them now. 35 states, I believe, have them now at some state of development or other. They're required in many of the special revenue sharing bills and other bills. We ought to face that. This bill faces that. So it says, okay, we're going to have 14 or 13 or 12 or whatever you finally decide, and we legitimize those things. And then the next key feature of the bill is to say, in determining the type of structure, the sense of direction from a local standpoint should be dominated by general purpose government, but make provisions for citizen participation if that area decides, or for special district participation. So that's the provision for two-thirds of the voting members must be from general purpose local government, cities and counties. It also incorporates the feature or concept of home rule. And it says strongly in this bill is not specific legislation saying, like OEO tried to mandate, membership and everything. It says within general guidelines of thrust of cities and counties dominant in this organization, you figure out who else you want on there based upon your needs in Lane County, or Marion, or Polk, or Yamhill, or Deschutes. And we can't tell them what they need over there. And I don't think the state can either tell everyone in the state what they need. So it's a broad-based kind of a guideline document. Okay, it also emphasizes the voluntary nature that sprung up Council of Governments by saying there are three options in this bill. If cities and counties don't opt into it at all, the governor appoints a seven-man board. The option it gives the governor is a mandate. They must be from general purpose government if you appoint them. So that requires cities and counties back in the business to study their own affairs. Instead of allowing the governor to set up another state board or commission or advisory committee, not of elected officials at all. They have to be local government. If the cities and counties locally assume the role of forming their own COG, according to this, then it says only the counties must be mandated. You need that feature, because we're looking at a state system and all the state's geography has to be covered if we're going to do land use planning, for example. and counties together cover them, the whole state, which means that every city, 238 of them, or whatever it is now, have the option of not even belonging, or the option of belonging. So from a city standpoint, if the governor doesn't appoint, it's still voluntary. Now, we would hope in Lane County that the 11 that now do belong would still belong, but that is their choice. Then it also says if you want school districts, then they should be on yours, but if in Cragg they don't want school districts, that's our local option. Now, that's essentially the key features of the bill. We think it essentially does what we've been doing, that we worked out ourselves, that in most of our areas is working well. It recognizes we now must face the legitimatizing of that kind of a state structure, or we'll have to do as we have been trying to do, change all of our structures to comply with everybody else's idea of how we should do their special functional planning, including state agencies. We can't respond.
I have a question, Senator Byrne. Ms. Rice, I was interested in the first part of your presentation where you talked about federal standards and requirements, and said that if you legitimize this, that it would get you off the hook. And I think I know what you're talking about in connection with the funding and the federal regulations and the federal statutes that say that there has to be instrumentality of legislative action in order to be the recipient for federal dollars going to the state or this or that. Is that, was that what you were talking about?
Yes, the...
Well, and now Mr. Logan's office is the funnel, as it were, through which the HUD dollars and the other federal money would go into the council from you. Is that
some
right?
No.
Well, were you,
so partially
were you suggesting that by making this a creature statute, that it would put you in a position then to go directly to the federal government with
Senator Silver Spur, he should be
in
the
Mr.
Burns, he said it would get us off the hook, and I want you to explain that.
I should like to explain that. The federal government believes there are 50 sovereign states. Where the state has taken legal action to specifically address itself to an issue, the federal government cannot override that determination of the state. If we say this is our district for planning, and this is the board that will do the planning in the area, comprehensive health planning can't come in and tell us, do it this way. Law enforcement can't come in and tell us, do it that way. Aging can't come in and tell us, if you want aging money, do it that way. They must abide by the state legal rules, okay? If the state hasn't addressed that issue, they can require us then to respond with a different planning makeup for their single missions.
Well, we have, now, you know, you get into some of these areas, and I know what you're talking about, but like, for example, LEAA money to set up the law enforcement council to do this vehicle to get the LEAA money, and we have representation statewide, and you do that through the law enforcement council.
Senator Burns, that's only because this governor opted into that process. In the state of California, law enforcement planning, by everyone's admission there except the governor, is a total state of disarray because it's totally alienated from all their other planning activities because it was set up totally separately.
You're talking about California, and we're doing it the right way in Oregon.
Only sometimes we do it the right way in Oregon. This governor has given directions administratively that can be changed by the next governor or by legislative act. That would change the whole ball game. Otherwise,
this legislature took the action in response to governor's leadership in setting up the law enforcement council in Oregon to do that.
Well, put it this way, manpower planning, for example, is not done that way. They use the district planning, but they're called governor's ancillary manpower planning committees, and they're all appointed by the Governor's Committee for Manpower. And in only two areas in the state that I know of, Wes's area and our area, is the Council of Governments in the manpower planning business as its own advisory committee with its own board. Is that correct? In aging, they have to set up a state system. The people in charge of administrating the aging program, which requires comprehensive planning, certainly wants to use the mechanism that's here now. They may use it in Wes's district, in our district. There are 12 other districts. They might not use it at all. There is nothing that says they must develop this mechanism in a common framework. This is why the vested interest groups, the public interest groups, said that there is a need for an umbrella agency where the variety of planning activities that take place within a district can be coordinated through one mechanism. And that's what we're addressing. Right now, Mr. O'Scanlan has the duty to present to the governor, and the governor only who shall make the determination, unless this legislative body does so itself, on how it will handle water quality management planning for all of the state of Oregon. And right now, we don't know whether we will be written in, we as local governments, into that planning process or not. And what we're saying is, if we've got to build the sewer systems, the water systems, many of the highways, all the other facilities, we should be written into the planning procedure where these decisions are being made. And we'd like to see that, a state act.
Yeah, could I summarize that, Mr. Chairman? Essentially, the bill, Senator Burns, provides the mechanism for the state to relate to local government in all of these planning areas that Larry has mentioned.
Thank you very much. Senator McGarry, help.
Chairman, we're contemplating Senate Bill 100 at this time, which I'm sure you're familiar with. And for a while, the concepts of this bill were included in Senate Bill 100. Now they've been taken out. Maybe I'm incorrect in assuming so, but I think we've got a problem if we pass both of these bills, Senate Bill 100 and this bill. And I wonder if you could address yourself.
As I understand the thrust of this bill, the language so indicates that when comprehensive planning is required within a district as a requirement of federal or state agencies, and we're talking regional planning, not local planning, then this agency would be designated the umbrella agency for that planning. Senate Bill 100 makes provisions for the counties to contract with and cooperate with other counties in the area. I'm assuming under ORS 190 they also can opt in with cities. There may have to be some legal rectification of that language, but I don't see any direct conflict if this bill then says Council of Governments will be the umbrella planning agency.
Let me comment on that, if I may, Mr. Chairman. In our area where we have three counties, I see a definite conflict if the other functions of planning are carried out, Senator Meeker, by the regional council, but the land use function is carried out by separate counties, then you fragment it into three parts, the land use planning activity, which is really the base of the planning, so-called planning pyramid. However, I recognize that even under the present Senate Bill 100, the three counties could opt to have their regional council do that land use planning function. At this point, I'm quite confident that in Marion, Polk, and Yamhill, they would take that action.
I'm saying, Senator Reeker, we'd probably do the same thing in Lane County.
I see on line 20 on page 3 the word land use.
Yeah. I think there's a conflict there.
Yeah.
You better, yeah. There's no question in my mind there is a conflict, especially in the multi-county COGS.
Any other questions?
Mr. Chairman, I can certainly see what you're driving to accomplish. Especially with flying to the Willamette. But let's just take one of the 2 year districts that are set up between Harney and Malheur County, District 14. Another one is more thickly populated, separated in a way geographically. Crook, Deschutes, and Jefferson counties. And apply the concept to that bill and tell me what you're accomplishing.
In those lower populated areas, Senator, I'm not familiar with the problems in the Eastern Oregon districts. However, I would guess that they have the same problems, perhaps at a lesser degree. And again, as Larry Rice pointed out, if we're talking about a system where the state relates to local government through the regional council, then I don't think you can exclude any part of the land area of the state.
Why can't the state deal directly with, let's say, Jefferson County instead of Crook County and Deschutes?
They can and do and would continue to do so. It's simply a matter of numbers. And the
why is the numbers so beneficial in that type of an area?
Okay. I think the answer, Senator, is the principle of an umbrella planning agency where all of these planning components, aging, human resources, land use, transportation, sewers, water, and so on, are put within a single regional planning agency for that district. Then you have a relationship between the state and the federal government, which is much more direct and much more efficient in terms of dealing with local government through their association local government. I think the key here is that the regional council is a council of local governments. It's their regional council. It's not another level of government.
Mr. Chairman?
They don't think so.
Right.
Could I also address that issue? If you put on your Congress hat, presidential hat, you'll find there are somewhere in the neighborhood of 38,000 cities and counties with varying powers throughout the 50 states. Special revenue sharing for rural community development that will be back up again next year that provides funds for our non-urban communities requires an area-wide agency, an area-wide organization composed primarily of units of local government. All of those kinds of things I referred to originally, Senator Burns, that will be imposed upon the states to develop some mechanism of an area nature of local governments to solve area-wide problems at a local nature level. Social problems are of that nature. Water quality problems, solid waste problems, transportation problems. Require some mechanism to do that. All right, this gets back to the business of the need for such a thing in Eastern Oregon or Southern Oregon may be less than the need in Willamette, Craig, Lane County. But the general purpose, the general requirement for that kind of cooperative local getting together to make joint decisions is still there. All we're talking about is the difference in urgency.
I'm trying to think of one problem. Prineville and Madison would have
how about prioritizing the funds within their area? Is that a function then strictly of the state?
I'm sure he to be the administrator on that.
We have that problem in every one of the areas now.
Is it on a population basis? I mean, I'm just trying to relate.
Right, I appreciate your concern.
Further questions? Okay, thank you very much. What I want to do, the session takes up 10:30. We've got some people from some distance. I'm going to take them. There are people here from Marion County that may not have an opportunity to testify today. And I'm not going to take the witnesses in any particular order, but I'm going to take those from the longest distance first. And we have one person who appears that's signed up to attend. In opposition to the bill, that's Commissioner Moffitt from Lakeside. Who's the commissioner?
Chairman, gentlemen, I am speaking for the Board of County Commissioners. We have reviewed this bill and came up with this statement, and so therefore, this is not my customary way of presenting testimony, but however, since I am officially endorsed to present this to you. I will read this with your indulgence. ORS Chapter 190, entitled Intergovernmental Cooperation, already provides authority for the creation of councils of government. This additional legislation can be needed for only two reasons: to appropriate funds to assist these councils of government as contained in Section 10, or to force the counties to participate in these councils as required by Section 6. If the legislation is needed to provide appropriations, then this can be accomplished with a simple appropriation bill. If the reason for this legislation is found in the need to mandate county participation, then this could be recited in the Legislative Assembly findings contained in Section 1 and must be supported by testimony if the bill is truly to rest on Legislative Assembly findings. If we assume that mandatory regional planning districts are needed, based on findings, based on testimony, then the regional planning district should be defined from principles of planning, not convenient geographic and political boundaries. Section 2, outlining the district boundaries, provides no insight into why those boundaries constitute effective planning jurisdictions. If the Legislative Assembly does make findings consistent with Section 1 regarding the increasingly complex government interaction, overlapping of jurisdiction, increasing need for coordination, and so forth, then there appears to be no reason why only one local unit of government is required to participate. Cities, school districts, sanitary districts, to name but a few, engage in activities which dictate mandatory participation for the same reasons, if any, that counties are so required. No rational distinction is made between who should belong and who should not. Mandatory county participation and permissive city participation, contained in Section 6, when read together with Section 8's requirement that council members contribute financially to the operation of the council, poses the following problem. In any district, the cities outnumber the county. All the cities would, therefore, be able to successfully draft bylaws and adopt budgets, including methods of payment, which could conceivably require counties to foot the bill for budgets which the cities would, through voting strength, control. Present federal requirements involving area-wide planning organizations require representatives of units of general local government who together represent not less than 75% of the population in the planning area. This bill would not meet those requirements and therefore is no better than existing legislation authorizing permissive councils of government. One of the most significant planning tasks, that of land use planning, will be controlled at the regional level by counties, as Senate Bill 100 presently outlines. It makes little sense to create regional planning agencies for collateral planning matters which do not conform to regional considerations contained in Senate Bill 100. This other portion wasn't abundant. A copy of these were some notes I was writing this morning, sir. I personally do not object to the restructuring of our government if it is needed. But I feel, sir, that when we do start restructuring the form of government as we know it and delegating powers to agencies which we set up without the knowledge or awareness of the people, that these things should be done by the people themselves. If we were to have a council or a regional government, I don't object to this, providing the people voted in and elect the people who serve upon it so that the citizen may have redress for the grievances the same as he has before this body or the body which I represent. Elected officials serving this. I've had some very sad experience with councils of governments in our area. For 2 years we've been trying to get a few little changes and finally Coos County dropped out of the council. And then, of course, there was consternation and great alarm because we represented enough of the population that it eliminated the council of governments. They didn't meet the requirements then. They have since been negotiating. We have negotiated with them, and they have agreed to change their bylaws and giving the county a weighted vote. We represent 35% of the people in the unincorporated area, and they are now going to give us 35 votes out of 110.
Is this in one county, or is this in Curry County?
This is Coos and Curry County, sir. Now, these boundaries that I mentioned, these were set up primarily by the governor's office as an administrative district, supposedly to make the operation more efficient in administrating communication funds and whatever. There's no relationship whatsoever with comprehensive land use planning and establishment of these districts. You cut off boundaries right where people are very closely associated with one another in their lives and in the geography and everything else. But then this, of course, is the area where this is it. I think there should be some different criteria. I'm not opposed to having regional planning. And I'm not opposed even to having a regional planning. It's no good unless you can put it in operation when you make the plan. And if you want regional government, if the people want regional government, sir, where they would have taxing powers and be able to obtain the funds to enact and to do the things which they set up and said are the best for the good of everyone, fine, if the people want it. But I oppose this bill very much, sir.
Thank you very much,
sir.
Appreciate it. Thank you, sir. Commissioner Flagel?
No,
Mr.
Chairman.
Okay. We have Audrey Soderberg from
Ashland. Are you a member of the city council?
Yes, sir.
I'm Audrey Soderberg from Ashland. I'm an Ashland City Councilwoman, and I have served 2 years on the Rogue Valley Council of Governments, and I'd like to speak in favor of this bill. I suppose I first should say that there are two things that I think ought to be amended to the bill, and one is on page 4, line 32, and
page
I think...
Page 4, line 32.
Yes, sir. Every... cross out the word any. Every city in a district shall be a member of the council and represented on the governing body. My reasoning for this is that part of the problems of council of governments, and particularly in our area, is that Josephine County does not choose to belong, and we have other small communities that do not belong. And I think this is a reasonable requirement. Since counties are required to belong, I think cities also should be required to belong to share not only the burden of financing the planning operations of Council of Governments, but also to share the burden of the decision making for Council of Governments in the area of planning. The other amendment I would like to see is on page 5, line 4.
Page 5, line 4.
Council shall be elected officials of the cities and counties that are members of the council. I think the word representatives does not spell out clearly enough that those people who sit on the council of governments are elected officials, and I think you would find more support for this bill if that's more clearly stated. I agree that we have problems in coordination of planning. I think all of us in the state recognize the fact that none of us in our particular municipality or county are an island that are not related to the others of the state, just as a state is not an island not related to the total federal government. We have an example of a problem in that Council of Government does solve is that people at least get an opportunity to sit down and discuss together problems of their areas and provide a method by which there is less duplication of the cost of total government within a regional area. As an example, for Rogue Valley Council of Governments, we've just completed a fire study for our Association of Fire Chiefs, showing that we can make certain adjustments within our fire districts to provide for less duplication of services than previously held. Our Council of Governments does serve Josephine County in a certain extent. We have two county comprehensive health planning, we have two county law enforcement, a two county child coordinated child care program, and in those areas we are already doing two county work as a Council of Government. I do believe that the Council of Government should have other responsibilities than planning for land use. I think they should be the agency that does the planning for all sorts of development in their area. And they should have the right to contract with other agencies to carry out the purposes to accomplish less duplication of services and of costs for a regional area. I think that's the extent.
Any questions of Bridget Sumner, Senator Reeder?
You mentioned that Josephine County does not participate.
No, it does.
Do any of the cities in Josephine County participate?
Yes, Grants Pass and Cave Junction.
Are they the only cities?
They're the only two, yes, sir.
Well, how does your county work? Do you pass judgment on things that occur outside of those two city limits?
No.
You do not.
I should say no to the extent that when recommendations come to us from the coordinating agencies such as comprehensive health planning, law enforcement, and child care, some of those service areas that those agencies serve do benefit from our Council of Government.
And so they're not paying for the service that they're getting.
They are getting it, yes, sir.
Another question? Thank you very much, Commissioner. I appreciate you coming.
Thank you.
Myron Hall.
I'm Myron Hall. I'm a member of the school board here in Salem, District 24J, and have represented the Salem School Board on the Mid-Willamette Valley Council of Governments for 3 years. My purpose in testifying this morning is not so much the technicalities of the bill, but to describe to you the commitment of the area. Last fall, we who are on the council became concerned about the functioning of the council, the understanding of the public about the council, and so we felt it important to raise these kind of questions publicly. We therefore established a committee which planned the annual meeting specifically for this single purpose. We set up our annual meeting in January and invited in representatives of all the elected representatives of the governmental units in the area, the advisory committees that advise the Council of Government, citizens at large, staff people. We had a large assembly of people. We broke down into groups of 12 where we could raise the question, what is the Council of Government, who is it, why should we have it, what is it functioning? It became my task to draw these recommendations from the local, from the small groups together and to present them to the plenary session. And I want to say that if there was one consensus that was clear in the presentation from the 12 groups, was that indeed regional planning was an absolute necessity for us. There was unanimity, absolutely, of those of us who had gathered, that this was indeed a requirement. And I think the thing that I want to make clear is that in that meeting where we tried to really raise the questions of why shouldn't we have this, what were its problems, we who really know the problems of the council from the inside and therefore know its weaknesses, as an insider can know its weaknesses, and we're not, you know, had did not weren't taking pot shots, but we know the weaknesses because we're part of it. There was a commitment that this is an absolute necessity if we are indeed to do our work right. And out of that meeting, we have established a continuing committee, a self-evaluation committee, to implement these concerns which were raised that night and to see how we can make the council function better. My testimony is that I do believe that this legislation will help us, and therefore I'm in favor of it.
Thank you very much.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Roscoe Cole, councilman in the city of Springfield and vice chairman of the Lane Council of Governments, and I'm here to support Senate Bill 826. First, I'd like to address the planning districts as specified in the bill. I'm sure you are all aware that during the last few years, under executive order of the governor, we have had 14 state administrative districts. The planning districts specified in the bill are identical in area. I believe it is time to legislate these districts and define their state local government planning relationships rather than having their existence and relationship with local government depend on executive order. Several pieces of national legislation are now requiring such districting for a wide variety of regional planning efforts. For instance, regional plans are required in such areas as land use, open spaces, sewer and water systems, transportation, criminal justice, manpower, and housing. I started with state administrative districts. This is state people out in the hinterland mingling with local agencies and people and administering state programs. This decentralization is a step in the right direction in that it provides a direct on-the-spot contact between the state as deliverer and local agencies and people as receivers. The omission in this arrangement is that it does not necessarily directly include local agencies or people in the program planning process. And this, I think, is what we are interested here. Now, with these states, with these sub-state regional districts, as required by federal and state actions in some cases, who then should do the regional planning? I believe it should be local governments working in their Council of Governments. This is not just my feeling. Recently, a major study about multi-jurisdictional planning and policy development organizations was conducted for the Office of Management and Budget and the Executive Office of the President. This study was undertaken by the nation's seven major government public interest groups, as Mr. Rice previously mentioned, the PIG groups. These include the National Legislative Conference, Council of State Governments, the National Association of Counties, International City Management Association, the National Governors Conference, National League of Cities, and the United States Conference of Mayors. I'd like to read a few excerpts from that study that was released this past month, and if you don't have available a copy of that study, we can get them available to you this afternoon. The directors of these seven agencies said that, and I quote, "The major recommendation of the study is that all single-purpose, multi-jurisdictional, area-wide programs should be under the control of an umbrella multi-jurisdictional organization whose policy board is composed of elected officials of general-purpose units of local government. This umbrella multi-jurisdictional organization should be given many workable options, such as establishing advisory committees for recommending policy for the single-purpose multi-jurisdictional programs. study went on to provide recommendations to the President, the Office of Management and Budget, Federal Regional Council, states, cities, and counties. I want to read from what these seven major organizations suggested for the state. Now I'm quoting from the report. One, states should enact enabling legislation for multi-jurisdictional planning and policy development purposes. Such legislation should include A, authority and a process for the recognition of sub-state regions that are acceptable to local governments. B, authority and process for the recognition of official umbrella multi-jurisdictional organizations. C, composition criteria for the policy board of the umbrella multi-jurisdictional organization. At a minimum, such composition should be a majority of the elected officials of local general purpose units of government with authority for localities to work towards boards made up entirely of local officials. D, relationships recommended between the policy board and the umbrella multi-jurisdictional organization, the state, and the general purpose local governments. E, functions which should include development and coordination of area-wide policies and plans. Two, coordination of policies and plans of independent functional agencies. Promotion, three, promotion of mutual problem solving and exchange of information. And four, such other services as may be requested by local governments. F, provisions concerning the weighting of the votes of the representatives of the umbrella policy board should be left to the determination of the localities. And G, authorization to the governor in those states where portions of interstate urbanized areas are located to enter into cooperative arrangements with the governors of adjoining states toward the creation and joint designation of umbrella multi-jurisdictional organizations. Two, states should appropriate funds to assist umbrella multi-jurisdictional organizations in the performance of their planning and coordination functions and should provide a program of technical assistance. Three, states should recognize and utilize a single set of geographic regions of the state for the planning and delivery of its own services as well as for the system of multi-jurisdictional areas. This recognition should also include funding priorities as established by the umbrella multi-jurisdictional organization. Four, to the maximum practical extent, states should seek to stabilize their sub-state regional boundaries. Five, participation by state officials on the umbrella multi-jurisdictional organization policy board should be on an ex officio, non-voting basis. Six, the chairperson of each umbrella multi-jurisdictional organization policy board should be provided opportunities for direct consultation with the governor, particularly during the formulation of geographic and program priorities during the executive budget process. Recommended is a state priority and planning process that is tied to the budgeting process, which can give access through the development of local goals and objectives to the decision-making process. Seven, states should designate the umbrella multi-jurisdictional organization and the state A95 clearinghouses for review and comment on any application for assistance from any unit of general or special purpose local governments or any state agency. Now that ends the quote. I think these recommendations point out the fact that most of us realize, and that is that the day of unilateral planning of single agencies in the same area is just not practical anymore. We've got to get together and coordinate our efforts. The Council of Governments is locally elected officials of many different jurisdictions within a particular geographic area joining together to carry out an activity. It provides a staff which becomes an extension of each individual agency staff for long-range planning. And most importantly, we, the elected officials, provide the policy direction. In the case of the Lane Council of Governments, a council of governments which has been active since 1945, the governing body is made up of city councilmen or mayor from every city in Lane County.
a Lane County commissioner, and several locally elected special district board members. This planning and coordination effort is carried out by a single group, an umbrella organization composed of locally elected officials. If the locally elected officials are not permitted to coordinate their efforts, then who will? The state government? And as a side, I noted the question is when it comes to priority of allocation, some of the problems that might be when you have to select who gets what. Well, if the state does it, it's going to have to be, they're going to have the ball, the check will be on their neck. Certainly it's better to work it out at the local level. If either of these are placed in that position, then we remove coordination and planning activities from the local level and from local decision making and out of the hands of local elected officials who are closest to the people and easily accessible to them. In a democracy, as understood by most Oregonians, I don't think this is what we want. In Lane County, we have been caring for this job under intergovernmental agreements for more than a quarter of a century. The reason we want to place this in law now is due to the fact that we are faced with so many pressures to meet varying, often conflicting, and definitely fractured efforts of federal and state agencies in numerous single-oriented planning programs or areas. We need common legislated agreement on geographic areas of responsibility and on the basic structure and role of local governments through councils of governments. We continually are confronted with well-meaning approaches to planning which are single purpose in orientation and fragmented in concept, like Senate Bill 100. The legislature and the governor must solve these fragmentation problems. They can assist local governments, and they can be in concert with the national thrust being developed by Congress and the President through support of this bill. We strongly urge its speedy passage. Thank you.
Who do you represent on the council?
Springfield, City of Springfield. Yes, I'm a city official, and I might add is that anyone that mentions that local officials that are on the board of the COG aren't responsible to the people is that my phone rings just as often after a COG board meeting as it does after a council meeting.
You have a question? I was wondering if we are copying.
Yes.
Okay. Thank you very much, Cole. Dorothy Anderson.
Copies of my testimony have been given to Ms. McClure, so they're available. I'm Dorothy Anderson. I'm from Eugene, but I am speaking as legislative chairman for the League of Women Voters of Oregon, so I'm speaking for all of the leagues, not just the Eugene League. Our 21 leagues throughout the state have been, both on the state and the local levels, involved in studies concerned with the problems facing our urban areas. The state studies, there were two statewide studies, one started in 1959 and the other started in 1969. From the 1969 to 1971, the league statewide study focused on comprehensive planning on a regional basis. Many local leagues who had studies in their own areas had already come to recognize the need for a more effective coordination of planning efforts by all governmental bodies and agencies. At the completion of the statewide study, league members expressed strong support for comprehensive planning on a regional basis and for a regional planning agency. Both during and after the state study, our leagues followed closely the activities of their councils of government. So when the state legislative committee, that's the league legislative committee, sent out a questionnaire in January, we set it out specifically concerned with Senate Bill 100, but we asked mostly about comprehensive planning in their regions and the COGS. We wanted them, asked them for an assessment of their COGS and the regional comprehensive plans. Their responses were derived from firsthand knowledge because they had been watching them very carefully. As strong advocates of citizen participation, our members favor keeping responsibility at the lowest effective level. We believe that councils of government serve as an important intermediate step between the local governments, which generally have demonstrated their inability to cope with growth problems by themselves, and the state, which is too far removed for citizen participation to be truly effective. Some leagues were critical of their COGS in the sense that they thought their comprehensive plans were not as yet comprehensive enough, or that citizens had not been involved in the development of their plans to the extent that they should have been. However, no league said that its COGS should be dispensed with. Even the less satisfactory COGS were performing some valuable service that the league felt would not have been performed without them. And of course, there are instances where the less effective COGS have been hampered by the opposition of some governing bodies in their region, so it's not the COG that's failing, it's the lack of cooperation of some of the governing bodies. Senate Bill 826 would recognize by statute COGS, but within certain basic requirements, permit regions to adjust the membership and duties of their councils to fit local circumstances. Also, Section 3, sub 4, that's the one that provides for citizen participation, that the citizens should participate in the study and deliberations preliminary to adoption of plans. We believe that that would give leagues in those areas where citizen participation has not been adequate a legislative mandate to point to. We should like to see added a provision requiring council meetings to be open to the public with public notice of the meetings and printed agendas. This has been a problem that some leagues pointed out in their areas. The League of Women Voters has become convinced of the need for a partnership of the national, state, and local governments to work in solving the problems of planning and growth. We see councils of government as furthering this partnership while making effective citizen participation within their regions possible, and we therefore urge your support of Senate Bill 826.
Questions and objections? Thank you very much. We have copies, right?
Right.
John Perrin. Oh, is Commissioner Forbes still here from Dallas? How long is your statement going to be, John?
About 3 minutes or 4 minutes, I can get to it. I do have copies. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I am John Perrin, member of the Oregon Shores Conservation Coalition, a statewide alliance of coastal landowners and residents and concerned individuals, totaling numbers to 300 individual members and 2,100 individuals associated through member groups. The vast majority of these individuals are coastal residents concerned with the low level of planning on the Oregon coast today. I am authorized by Citizen Alliance's Legislative Committee to support the legislation before you today, which we believe is consistent with a policy statement adopted last summer at our membership meeting, supporting regional planning on the coast as a way to bring up the level of expertise required to solve coastal planning problems. Briefly, the problem on the coast, the entire coast, not just the north coast, as some would have you believe, is tremendous developmental pressure on land, which is limited to a rather narrow strip along the ocean front, with the exception of parts of Tillamook and Coos counties. Compounding the problem is the fact that most of the land in this narrow strip is wetland, lake, river, estuary, floodplain, geologically hazardous, sand dune, or sand spit where development should not occur except in a very limited manner with the proper precautions or not at all. Other areas of the coast have a higher land use for agriculture or forest. Other areas are economically unsuitable for development. Planning on the coast is a great deal more difficult than planning on the valley. Typically, local communities and counties are small in population and cannot afford the level of expertise to plan in this situation. The state agencies have been helpful, but lack funding to adequately advise the local communities or are simply not listened to. The city of Rockaway in Tillamook County is 2 miles long and has a population of 300 people. Development is occurring around lakes on wetlands, which make the lakes the fishing paradise that they are, and on cliffs, which are being eroded. The city of Newport recently okayed a motel complex at Jump Off Joe's right in an active slide area. A state geologist, who I might add, testified at a hearing for a variance to put the motel complex in that area, estimated the area would slide within 30 years, a long-term development. It is the belief of Oregon Shores Conservation Coalition that the only way in which small communities on the coast and the coastal counties can gain the needed expertise is through regional planning bodies setting forth standards and regulations that really protect the environment and an individual's investment. Senate Bill 826 does not go that far, but if one took the 6 or 7 COG planners currently allocated to the coast,
and combine these planners with three OCC and DC planners, then the level of expertise could be gained. There is one flaw which I understand, but feel obligated to point out to you in Senate Bill 826. That is, the boundaries of COGS fall political boundaries and not reasonable planning lines. It is the belief of the Oregon Shores Conservation Coalition that COGS should be drawn along reasonable planning lines. On the coast, this would be two COGS bounded on the east by the crest of the Coast Range Mountains and on the west by political jurisdiction. Division between north and south coast planning boundaries is a vegetation line running roughly adjacent to the southern boundary of Lincoln County. Note that this division cuts Lane and Douglas counties into two pieces. It is important for the legislature to keep in mind that these COGS are not governments but planning bodies. The boundaries should follow reasonable planning lines. I believe that there are 6 to 9 planning areas in the state, 1 or 2 on the coast, 1 to 3 in the valley, 1 in southern Oregon, 1 in southeastern Oregon, 1 in central Oregon, and 1 in eastern Oregon. Political jurisdictional boundaries are only of secondary importance. Thank you for the opportunity to express these views. I might add that I do support Senator Burns' 9 counties bill if they do follow reasonable planning lines.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.
Mr. Forbes? Sorry to keep you waiting so long.
That's all right. I have prepared. I'm a Polk County Commissioner, but I'm here to speak for Polk County, Marion County, and Yamhill County, and speak in favor of the bill. So I will, I've been authorized to make this statement, and I'll read my statement. Mr. Chairman and committee members, I very much appreciate the opportunity to appear before you in support of Senate Bill 826. While I am a commissioner from Polk County and chairman of our council's legislative committee, I also appear on behalf of the commissions of both Marion and Yamhill counties in support of this bill that would recognize in the laws of our state the 14 administrative districts and the planning and coordination process that has been ongoing in our area beginning as far back as 1957. By way of a very brief background, you should know that our original membership of 5 has increased to 28, representing 3 counties and 17 cities, 7 districts, and also the state of Oregon. Every urban center in the Mid-Willamette Valley is represented with the exception of the city of Monmouth. Mr. Chairman, we in Mid-Valley area have adopted what has been termed the umbrella approach to planning and governmental coordination. That is, our Council of Local Governments carries out the planning for land use, transportation, law enforcement, aging, manpower, comprehensive health, social services, sewer, water, and open space on a tri-county area-wide basis. Operation of programs that result from that planning process are then carried out by an existing unit of local government. One quick example would be the school community liaison program developed in our law enforcement planning effort, with the operation of that program involving 6 cities: Newburgh, Salem, McMinnville, Dallas, Woodburn, Silverton, and our own 3 counties. Another example would be the Marion County City of Salem Central Computer Facility, which was recommended by our Council of Governments after a detailed study of the 2 existing departments. The recommended joint facility is now operational and is administered jointly by Marion County and the City of Salem. Incidentally, we expect a saving to the taxpayers of some $378,000 over the first 5-year operation of this facility as a result of the combined facility. An added premium is more computer power and the capability of contracting with other agencies in the Tri-County area. You will note that I mentioned our role in planning for the aging. This is a critical area in the Mid-Valley because we have 38,000 people in the over 60 age bracket. Our Council of Government was approached by many senior citizens and organizations within the Tri-County area and requested to carry out the planning for aging programs with the assistance of a 75% federal grant. We anticipate that the plan developed by our council will recommend projects and programs along with the different priorities. Again, we expect that these projects will then be carried out by direct contact with existing agencies, thereby preserving the concept of an umbrella planning agency with operation of programs by the existing units of government. In Polk County, our council also provides planning services to the City of Dallas, our county seat, and has prepared comprehensive plans for Dallas, Independence, and Monmouth. In Marion County, we provide direct planning services to Salem, Woodburn, Mount Angel, Silverton, and Staten, and have prepared comprehensive plans for all those cities. In Yamhill County, we serve McMinnville, Carlton, and last year completed a comprehensive plan for McMinnville. An important provision of the bill is contained in Section 4, wherein the Council of Local Governments is designated as the official planning agency for those state and federal programs that require area-wide plans and planning certification. Our council currently carries out this function, thus giving local government a much-needed voice in the funding and programming of state and federal agencies. We support the concept of the bill and recommend three amendments for your consideration. Section 1, we recommend, along with Mayor Lindsay, that language be drawn to state that a regional council is an association of local governments rather than an extension of state and federal governments. In Section 3, we recommend again with Mayor Lindsay that a new provision be inserted to clearly prescribe to the Regional Council the responsibility for area-wide planning and coordination with the direct provision of services to the citizens being handled by existing units of government. Section 6, subsections A and B, we recommend new language stating that counties and cities shall be represented by an elected member of their governing body. In summary, Mr. Chairman, on behalf of the counties of Polk, Marion, and Yamhill, and on behalf of our council's legislative committee, we strongly endorse the bill with our recommended amendments and urge that your committee move the bill to the Senate with a due pass recommendation.
Questions, Mr. Clark? Thank you very much. We appreciate it.
Thank you.
Van Hoosen, how long will your report take?
Half a minute.
You're just the witness of the order.
I will, Mr. Chairman, I will submit the written details of my testimony. This afternoon, I am Jim Van Hoosen of the Health Division and staff of the State Comprehensive Health Planning Authority. I am here representing the Comprehensive Health Planning Authority and am in favor of this bill. And especially my specific interest is in the area of health, Section 3. In the area of health, we see increased need for regionalized planning. We see increased need for addressing this in a formal way with increased support from the state as well as from the local areas, and for this reason we do support this concept and this bill.
Other questions, Mr. Hoosen? Thank you very much, Jim, and thank you for your patience.
You bet.
Okay, that concludes the hearing on Senate Bill 826. Thank you.